I'm going to apologize up front that I gave a shiur for the younger boy for the middle school and beforehand, and I realized that I lost my voice. I've lost my voice, so we're going to work with a speaker, hopefully. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? A little more still. Okay, is that good? That's too loud. Okay. I apologize. I just left my voice in Cleveland. So before we start, I'd like to take the opportunity again. I'm going to set my shear very low-key. Just, I can't. It hurts. Set my voice higher. So if you fall asleep in the middle of the shear, because my voice is very pleasing, as I accomplished something very, very important, helping you to have a relaxed afternoon. It's not a bad thing. Okay. I want to thank Mr. Rosenblum and the family for sponsoring and dedicating today's learning. Rili Nishmas, their father, grandfather, Moshe Herschel Ben Lachaim Ben Simeon. Three events ago, I think. Right away, Jeff came over to me and said he would like to sponsor the next one. He was very nice to move out there because somebody had a yahrzeit on one of them. And so he kept pushing it off, but he finally got his opportunity to have this chance to dedicate the day of learning. It's a very special thing. Thank you. I want to take the opportunity to thank you, Moshe Chaim Blate. It was him here somewhere, I hope. Outside, studying people, yeah. For arranging the event, taking care of all the details. Without him, it wouldn't happen. It was his original idea, this whole program that we're doing. With many other things, he's constantly coming up with it. Each week, he has a new idea, something that Carlos should do. We've been able to implement some of them, Baruch Hashem. Looking forward, Baruch Hashem, at some point in time, to implement more of them. I'd also like to thank Rabbi Yaakov Mordechai Goodman for this beautiful packet that you see in front of you, a labor of love, tremendous amount of effort put into it. So thank you for the... I'll put it like this. I was in Cleveland last night. I took an early flight, and I contacted him at 1:30 in the morning. He was still working on some details of the youth packet. At 4:30 I got up. He said he just finished the packet. So I said, go to sleep. He said, hee hee. Was his response by text. His response. So, I want to thank his wife for tolerating this. Okay. The topic today is Chanifus. I'm going to try this. Better or worse? No. Okay. The topic today is Chanifus. The usual translation of the word, the classic translation of the word is chanufa or chanifus, is flattery. And by now you've learned most of the packet, a good part of the packet, you realize that does not do justice to the topic. The topic is not, flattery is not the issue. It is used like that in the classic sources. One example which we gave.
Could be the tie.
Fine. So you'll see that the Rosh uses it in that language, that the Chanifus means this idea of flattery, and that's something which is improper. It's probably more improper based on the issue of Gnevas Das. If I'm flattering somebody to get a benefit from him, I'm not indicating that's why I'm doing it, that's a form of Gnevas Das. I'm fooling him for some benefit of my own. So that's not Chanifus, that's Gnevas Das. And actually, if you look at the Ben Yair, in one place he actually seems to use the word Chanifus in the context of Gnevas Das, and that's probably more connected with what it means. Wow. Hack. Anyway, but as you see from the sugya of the Gemara, the Gemara is using this idea of chanifus, condoning something improper. So here, a grifus is something wrong. He is the melech, and Klai Yisrael, the Chachamim representing the Klal Yisrael had the opportunity to tell him he's recognizing that there's a problem. And instead of responding and saying, yeah, it's a problem, you shouldn't be the king, they're saying, no, it's okay. And the more said that was an act of chanifus. The more has strong language in the Baal Chachamim that the reaction was improper and they deserved to be destroyed. And this is a source of destruction in Klal Yisrael. There is an opinion of the Gemara which says you're allowed to be mafla to Russia. Now, we would point out that the quote, first quote of the Gemara, the Mishnah says what they did. The Mishnah does not say good or bad. The Mishnah says what happened. The Tosefta says that it was that they deserve to be destroyed and punished because of what they've done. Then the Gemara brings the Amoraim would say that it's okay. So you have a Tana Brisa saying it's a problem. That the reaction was improper, was wrong. And we have the Amora saying, it's okay, you ought to be machlok to the Russia. So you need to figure out how to understand that, how that's going to work. Tosis comes along, you saw Tosis says that if there's any life-threatening situation, the person is not required to endanger his life because of this Avera of Losach HaNifa was or it's. It's like any other lavim. It's not yarg v'yavur. So that's pretty clear. We learn the Gemara. We have a pretty clear understanding of that. So now we have to understand. So how does Tosfos learn the Gemara? It has to be that they were not afraid that a griefus is going to kill them, even though he was the king and he had the power of the king. He had the power of the army behind him, and he could have done whatever he wanted to them. He was a person of integrity to the point that they were not afraid. They should not have been afraid that he would react with endangering their lives. And so therefore they should have said the truth, that you can't be the king. But had it been a situation where their lives would have been threatened, so it's not one of the three cardinal sins, and yes, they at that situation they would have said it's okay, and that's it, and that life would move on, and that would be it. That's how we would understand the Gemara according to Tosis. That's what Tosis says very clearly. The last point in Tosis says if you want to understand what is the problem over here, but the Gemara says that this is deserving of destruction, what is the problem? We're making it as if Hashem is not seeing. The main thing is what people are thinking, not what Hashem is thinking. We'll call that a chil Hashem. The Gemara uses that context of the story of David Tzinaganov and a Goslin. That's the phrase where Tosis borrows it from. So you find such an idea that you need to have your Shemayim at least equivalent to your Yerubasa's Madam. If you go through the packet, you continue, you'll see that, however, the other Rishonim seem to see this Gemara quite differently. I'm afraid to move my packet and see what happens. Okay. The Rabbeinu Yonah in your packet, which is on page 11, no, page 13. So the Gemara on Mem Beis Amud Aleph says there are four groups which cannot greet the divine presence even after they pass away. They cannot be ushered into the divine presence. And it goes through the four. So the Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva, in his classic work Shari Tshuva, it's at the end of the third shar. He goes through these four groups, and he takes them and divides them up into subcategories. So the group of Kadah Chanefim, which is the group of this group of people which are Chanefim, he divides into nine sections. He says the Chelik Rishon, which is the person who knows that something is being done improperly, and he responds positively, says it was okay what you've done. So you have an example I saw. You have a wealthy donor came to visit you. He's not so knowledgeable about Hilchos Shabbos, and he's sitting at a table with a lot of other people, and he does Berer. Does Berer. Berer is a very common malacha in Shabbos. And so somebody says, it's Berer, and the guy's all embarrassed. So, all embarrassed. He's not giving any money. She says, no, it's probably not Berer. It's okay. Right? So that's you're being mocked of him to tell him what he did, what wrong was okay. You can't do that. You can't say that. He sees four problems with that. You see four elements of what the problem with that is. The first one is you didn't do tachacha. You didn't rebuke him. You didn't correct him. Number one. Number two, you said checker. It's not true what you said. You told him that this is okay when it really is not okay. Number three, you've created a mikshel for the person. He's not going to correct himself. He's not going to feel regret what he's doing, and he's not going to correct himself. So three and four, he's not going to have a regression. He's not a regret, and he's going to do it again. So the Renegade seems to focus, as opposed to Tosis, the problem is that you're ignoring Hashem's presence and you're not caring about Hashem. It seems to be focusing on you're hurting the person. You could have corrected the person, you could have rebuked him, you could have hoped that he would change what he's doing, and you could have helped him, and you didn't do that. It seems to be focusing more on the Benot on the Chaveri element than the Benot on the Malkim. It's not because there's a Chil Hashem, it's because I've ignored Hashem's presence and I care about people's attitudes more than Hashem, but it's rather that you could have helped somebody, you didn't help him. And then he says, but if it's done publicly, if it's not a private situation, but it's a public situation, so then you're being mevaza das v'din. You're publicly saying that a veir is acceptable. That's taka chilul Hashem. That's a chilul Hashem. So that's, he only introduces that last element of the problem is the insult to Hashem's Torah in a case where it's public. In a case where it's private, he doesn't seem to see that as being the problem. We didn't see that in other Rishonim. The Chafetz Chaim, which I didn't look at right now, but the Chafetz Chaim does not seem to make this differentiation that I'm saying. Chafetz Chaim just quotes, there's a problem, Lashon Hara is a common issue. He says Lashon Hara, a person says Lashon Hara, and you don't want to call him out on it, so you even maybe even possibly will agree with him a little bit because he's somebody that you need. He's the boss, let's say. The boss is not necessarily the most, he might be the boss, and that doesn't mean he's a nice guy. Right, and he says, you know, he walks in the office, he says, you know, this guy's, he's such a who knows what, right, you know, like, and she said, you know, you shouldn't say that, you know, that's not right to say that, you know, you might lose your job. I saw a scenario which the story person was on the, person's on the job 2 weeks, you know, he's newly hired, the manager of the office has about 25 people under him, and he's a very explosive, insulting type of a person. You know, when somebody does something wrong, and he just lets it loose on this guy in front of everybody else in the office. And then he turns to you, turns to this new hire, and he says, I did him good, right? I told him off the way he's supposed to, right? So what do you say? You say, yeah. that's his case over here. He's my boss, somebody barabbed him. That's an os devorim. He publicly insulted somebody. He probably the guy feels like, you know, who knows what. It's equivalent of, more says that's equivalent of murder. So there's such a thing. And I'm supposed to say, yeah, it was nice. Because if I say it wasn't nice, I lose my job. Well, I'm not going to say, I can't say that. So what am I supposed to do? What do you do in that situation? So that's the, now, but that was public. So I say yes. I'm saying it's okay to insult people publicly. I can't say that. That's Mavaz Adas Vadin. It was private. The Chavos Chaim's case is where it's private. It was between me and the two of us. It wasn't public. And he still says you have this idea of the Rebbeinu Yonah. The next paragraph says, V'chai v'ha'adam limser atzma l'sakona v'ayasi es nashri oban ashma kazois. Person has to endanger his life for this. Give up your life possibly. He brings our Gemara. He understands the Gemara and other choices that their life was in danger. Agrifus could have killed them. And the Gemara says that the fact that they did not call out Agrifus is wrong. They should have called him out even though their life would be in danger. Now, I'm going to suggest that the Renegade is going back on this last point. Since it was public, so in a public situation, there's a Chil Hashem involved. So a Chil Hashem involved, so then there's a Yevachiyev. That's our Gemara saying, Yevachiyev to be Moser Nefesh. This is a public situation. He's sitting with all the Chachamim. It was in front of the Kaiser, with Hakel. It was a case of Hakel. It means you had thousands of people over there. And he starts crying publicly, and everybody said, what? The king is crying. What's he crying about? He thinks he's not supposed to be the king. The rabbi said, it's okay. That's a horrible situation. They can't do that. They should have given up their lives not to do that. That's a public desecration of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's name. But the case where it's private doesn't say that. The Chafetz Chaim doesn't say like me. The Chafetz Chaim is talking about a private case. You still should. You should give up your life not to be the Khalifas. That's what Chafetz Chaim understands it. But again, the focus of the Rebbeinu Yonah, the general Isser of Chanifas, I want to point out, is not this public issue. It's not Chil Hashem. The general issue is the Beinonim Chaveiro. You're not taking care of somebody else. You're strengthening him. If you look back on the Gemara in the Dorim, which is on page 8, Ula came to Rechon after his story that his wife was in danger. He's challenged with he witnessed the murder, and the murderer turns to him and says, "You know, I did a good job, right?" So you're at that point in the situation, the fellow has the knife in his hand. It's full of blood. He just shafted the guy next to you. He says, "I did a good job." So if you say, "Yet no," that's not necessarily the healthiest thing. It might be the last thing you do, right? So he says, "Yes." And as a matter of fact, you should actually widen the opening. This way, he'll die more quickly. That's what Ula said. The Mor says he got the reference. He says, "Oyvei, I was machazik de aveir. I strengthened people doing aveirus." So I think that the Ben Yehuda is saying that that's the primary issue, is this being machazik de aveir. I'm strengthening people doing aveirus. I basically condoned murder. He'll do it again. So I can't do that. But the Ben Yehuda seems to focus on the damage to the individual, that he's not going to correct himself. Tosfos seems to focus on the damage, the insult to Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is involved in that. There seems to be two different approaches. Okay. If you look at, I don't know whether you got there or not, but let's just move to that. I want to see this case inside. So the page 20, there's a quote from the Marshal. So Marshal is dealing with the Gemara, which is on page 19. Some of you might have gotten to the Gemara. The Gemara over there says a story. The halacha is, if you have a shore, if you have an animal, an ox, which gores, the first time that it gores another ox, you pay half of the damages, chatzi nezek. Second time, chatzi nezek. Eventually, if it does it multiple times, it's called a shermuad, and you pay nezek shovet. The Mora says that this is only true talking about a Jewish-owned ox to a Jewish-owned ox. But if both of them, but if one is Jewish-owned and one is not Jewish-owned, the halacha is different. A Jewish-owned ox gores a non-Jewish-owned ox, he pays nothing. A short time. A non-Jewish owned ox, gores a Jewish owned ox, it pays nezek shovet, pays full damages. So the Morse has a story that the Roman government sent a group of their leaders to the rabbis to learn Torah. And they got to this halacha, and the Chachamim said, "Well, the halacha is if it's Jewish owned ox, not Jewish owned, it pays nezek shalem, it pays full damages, doesn't pay anything at all." So the Marshal says, "I don't get it. I mean, you're talking about Romans. These people killed on a dime. You're talking about, you know, Jewish owned ox, non-Jewish owned ox. You know, if the Jews did it, he doesn't have to pay at all. The Goy did it, he has to pay full damages. Jew the Jew, it's half damages. They're endangering their lives. They're endangering their lives. How could they do this? Why were they allowed to do that? They should have to say, you know, always chai, always pot, or something, you know." So as you see from this, so it's the shaded piece on page 20. You can't distort the words of Torah, even though you're endangering your life. Your person has to give up his life not to distort the Torah. You see, he goes through the case. They were talking about the Romans. The Romans were known that they killed very easily, and you know, we were talking about endangering their lives. So he says, "So why is this?" So if you go down about 8 lines, he says, "Im chas v'shom yeshan hadin havi kekoifer b'teres Moshe." You're denying Hashem's Torah. Like he says at the bottom, you can't deny one halacha, denying all of the Torah. What's the difference? You can't deny Hashem's Torah. Hashem's Torah is that this is a halacha. Here you pay full damages, here you pay zero damages, here you pay half damages. I can't make my own Torah. I can't make it up. I have no right to change it. I have no right to distort Hashem's Torah. And if I do so, I am denying that it's a divine given Torah. I can rewrite the words. That's equivalent of what is worse than Avodah Zarah. The worst than Avodah Zarah, a person who denies the divine element of Torah, is worse than doing Avodah Zarah. So he understands that a person would have to give up his life not to do this. I know modern Pesach was passed in certain cases just permitted, and a very strong group of people of other modern Pesach came out against him that it's also, and they asked him to retract. So they can't. Marshal. I believe it's mutter, and I retract because of pressure. I am distorting Torah. I'm not allowed. So the first half, probably about the first third of his tshuva, is to go. He goes through this marshal. He doesn't even respond to him. He says, "First of all, there's a marshal." He goes through the marshal for about a third of the tshuva, talking about why I can't distort Torah and I have to say what I believe is the truth. And then he goes, and after that he goes through his tshuva why he believes that it's mutter. But he felt that this marshal is a lachol lemaisa. In the packet. on page 24, the last page over here, this is a quote from David Cohn, where he discusses with the Rosha this issue. An individual person passed on something he felt was a distortion of Torah, and he quoted the Marshal. He asked the Marshal Feinstein, Zichler Bruch, about this Marshal. The Marshal said that we don't pass like the Marshal. You don't have to give up your life not to distort Torah. That's what the Marshal said in this quote. His proof was the censoring of all of our Sforim. They were censored. So sometimes, I actually one time in Cleveland, the Cleveland Public Library is a very, very tremendous collection of different things. So they have a collection, they had a set of Talmud, which had been censored by the non-Jewish censor. So it was printed with the words there, and then there was black ink over the words. So you'd see, like, they opened up to the pages, they had opened the pages, where you'd see, like, this little perfect black ink covering, like, 3.5 lines of Gemara, etc. But eventually they started publishing the Gemaras without those pieces, or they changed words. You're distorting Torah. The answer is because their lives were in danger, as Ramosha said. You're allowed to distort Torah to save your life. That's what Ramosha said on that quote. That's what David Cohn's quote. However, in Ramosha's tshuva, he seems to say, not like that. You look at Ramosha's tshuva, Ramosha was asked the question. The question was, you had a individual who was a doctor who did a lot of favors for the community. He was coming to the Orthodox shul. His mother was Orthodox, and he came to the Orthodox shul. He was married to a non-Jewish woman, and he was not given any type of honor in the shul. He was not given aliyah, he was not given psicho, he was not given anything of that sort. And he was being insulted by that they're ignoring, he's doing such favors to the community, and they're ignoring him. And the Rav who asked the question, you look at the date, it's 1960. You can imagine the climate of 1960. And we live in a little bit different society nowadays, but imagine the climate of 1960. This was where Judaism was going to, by many people's eyes. The Rav wanted to know, is he allowed to give him an aliyah? Is he allowed to give him psicha? Is he allowed to give him hagba, galila, something in the shul? Is he allowed to give him that the person should continue giving his interest and concern and care to the community? So he says you can't give an aliyah. He goes to why halakhically you can't give a person who does not believe in the Torah, he's not accepting the Torah, you can't give an aliyah because you can't have him say the brachas when he doesn't believe what he's saying. So you can't give an aliyah. But theoretically, you can give him psicha, you can give him hagba, galila. I don't see a problem with that theoretically, but I have a problem with chanifas. He says, by the fact that I'm honoring him, I'm indicating what he's doing is acceptable, and I know how to do that. That's the question. That's how he presents the question. So he says, you have to understand that this conversation over here, where they have this probe, Tosfos has to point out that you don't have to give up your life for this. And Tosfos proves it from Gemara. Like, why would you think you have to give up your life? What's this hava mina that I would think you have to give up your life, that I need to prove it from a Gemara that you don't have to give up your life? And the Ula says, I'm worried. No, don't worry. You saved your life. I mean, he didn't know he saved his life. Of course, he knows he saved. That's why he did it. So, well, what's this conversation? He says, apparently, the answer is the Marshal. The Marshal says the answer is the Marshal. Here there's a distortion of Torah taking place. By condoning, you're distorting Torah. And that, the Marshal says, you have to give up your life. So the question is, what's called distortion? If you would actively distort, you would actively say X instead of Y, Y instead of X, that's distortion. That you have to give up your life. Over here, he didn't actively say that. He said, did I do a good job? He said, yeah, I did a good job. I didn't say it was good. I didn't say you're tzaddik. I didn't say you're rush. I said you did a good job. You know, yeah. People who are murderers would say there was a phenomenal job. You did 100% the way you're supposed to do it. You got the right spot in the jugular. That's all I said. You know, I didn't say that you're tzaddik. I didn't say you're rush. I didn't say anything. So it's not clear. Now, yes, it's implied. Under the circumstances, that's probably what's implied, but I didn't say it explicitly. So that Ula felt maybe even that you have to give up your life, and Rebbe said no, since it's a situation of danger, A, and it's not clear what you're saying, okay, that's mutter. If it not be a situation of danger, even that's not mutter. You can't imply that something's acceptable when it's not acceptable, but under the circumstances that's acceptable. So we're making different levels according to Ramosha. But Ramosha, he says, okay, so let's go back to our situation. We're giving the person psicha. Am I saying it's okay that he's married to a non-Jewish woman? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the person did tremendous favors for the community, and I want to recognize that he's done favors for the community. That's all I'm saying. So there's I'm not explicitly saying that it's okay that he's done an Aveira. I'm not saying that. If I'd say that would be not acceptable. I'm not even necessarily implying it, he said, because it's understood why I'm doing this. So that my point over here is not to condone his actions. My point is to appreciate the benefits that he's given. So Marshall said that situation would be mutter. Now, let's take the Marshall in the context of the approaches which we've seen in the Gemara. So we saw the approach of the Marshall. The problem is distortion. So that's the Marshall is going clearly with the approach of distortion and saying distortion is we're not distorting, so it's a mutter. Now, you know, and we know that the reason why we're doing this for the person is because he's getting us favors, even though we would like to, in some way, not give him this kavod because of what he's doing. So, this is the point that there's an ayin shel, we're ignoring the ayin shel mala because we want to get better from the ayin shel mata, is still there. Right? Maybe it's not as explicit, but Rav Moshe doesn't seem to address the approach of Tosis. And according to Ben Yonah, the problem is that you're being mechazik today over Aveira. You're giving him the indication that you accept him for what he's doing. He's not going to change. Right? According to Ben Yonah, the issue is not the chil Hashem. This is not the distortion of the Torah. The according to Ben Yonah, the issue is you have taken a person who maybe might change, but if you would call him out on it, if you would to teichach, and you're refraining from teichach, you're being mechazik him. You're strengthening him in his position. Are you allowed to do that? If you feel it's wrong, are you allowed to do that? See, maybe you know, it's an argument, you know, what's the definition of right or wrong? But once you agree that that's, we're not arguing that, well, there's something over here which is being done wrong, which theoretically you are strengthening him in his position by doing this. So according to Rabbi Yarna, the Lachara, that would be problematic. So Rav Moshe seems to be going with the approach of the Marshal. I'm not sure according to Ben Yonah the Rav Moshe's psak would be the same. According to Tosis, the psak would be the same. According to the Marshal, the issue is distortion. He's saying there's not a distortion over here, which is, and therefore it's not problematic. So that I think is a very important to understand which way Rav Moshe went. I just want to share with you a story. Just try and put this in context a little bit. Okay. Don't breathe in front of a microphone. If you look through the different parts of the Ben Yonah, pages 13, 14, and 15, so on page 14 he talks about friendship with Rishoyim. So, friendship with Rishoyim. So, it says that that's wrong, because if you find Ra repulsive, why would you want to be his friend? But the fact that you're being friendly with him, you're saying that you don't find it repulsive. And then, that's one point that he says. And then again, this is this point of that people are going to... And then in Kufsa, page 15, he goes to this whole different examples of when you have an opportunity to make a protest. I can protest and I don't protest. That's also from Rav Chanifus. He sees that the people in the community are very difficult people. They're probably not going to listen anyway. So he says, what's it worth it for? Also. He knows for sure they're not going to listen. But they're going to say, if I don't say anything, they're going to assume I agree with them. Also from Rav Chanifus. Right? So he goes through all of these cases where if you really believe that this is wrong, we're being called upon. Now, is he saying this is the primary issue of the Torah? I don't think so. Could be these are more madrigas, but they're based on Gemaras. And not just the Chabad Chaim writes that the Ben Yonah was very careful when he wrote his Shari Tshuva, even though it's a Musa Sefer, not to go beyond the halacha. The point of the Sefer right now is what he's trying to do, if you understand what he's doing, he's saying, I want you to do tshuva. I want you to know what are called the veiras that you have to tshuva on them. So let's define the veiras. The purpose of Shar Gimel is not Musar. The purpose of Shar Gimel is to explain what an aveira is that you should know that you have to do tshuva on it. So that's what the Chofetz Chaim writes, that that in general, the Ben Yonah was very careful not to go beyond the letter of the law. If you look at the Ben Yonah and Shar Gimel, many other places, he very stresses with this idea that if a person finds, if you really care about your king, so he says that point. But over here, he seems to be focusing on, you know, somewhat on the individual. I just want to share with you a thought process. Maybe I'm moving into territory a little bit. I had a conversation I had a relative who married a non-Jewish woman. And so I did not attend the wedding, and I wrote them a letter explaining why I'm not attending the wedding. And which became public knowledge amongst my extended family, the fact that I wasn't attending, and the letter that I wrote and what it said. I didn't publicize it, but it became public knowledge. So at the next family get-together, another relative called me out on why I'm intolerant and I'm not accepting and I'm, you know, high-handed and, you know, and, you know, all of those wonderful adjectives that they have about. So I said to her, it was a woman, I said to her, I want to redefine the argument. So we don't disagree. We really don't disagree. I said, this relative of ours isn't here. We were standing in the kitchen. Since he's about to put his hand into the fire, what would you do? She said, I would stop him. I said, I don't understand. You're being intolerant, being unaccepting. He wants to put his hand into the fire. Let him put his hand into the fire. What's your business? Why are you telling him what to do? Because you care about him enough that if he hurts himself, you want to stop him. So our argument is about something else totally. Our argument is, what is such a thing as spiritual harm? That's our argument. That's the whole argument. You're as intolerant as I am. You would not let somebody that you care about hurt themselves, and you're not tolerate. You will not tolerate that. You will not accept that. I mean, you happen to think there's such a thing as spiritual harm, and I think that there is. Okay, so then we have that. That's not the argument. So let's not use these incendiary type of terms. I'm this horrible person. I don't care about other people. I happen to care about it very much. I might even care about it more than you do. And I just reframed the conversation, and the person agreed with me. To her credit, she agreed with me that's the point. She didn't accept my position, but she understood that she can't frame it in these types of phrases, which make it that I'm this horrible monster who's attacking people, and she's this wonderful righteous woman who cares about everybody else in the world. That's not the issue, not at all. So that's what everybody is saying. You care about them, so do something about it. So just to close with one last story. I was in Cleveland for Shabbos. I mentioned to what person was involved in the fellow over there, who runs the program up for the fellow over there. We're doing this program. So I had the packet with me, or I had the pre-packet with me. So I showed it to him, and we're looking at it together a little bit, etc. So he tells me a story. He's a very outgoing, a very comfortable guy. He's very comfortable, say whatever he wants on his mind to anybody in the world. Right. So he says, I think I had a funny situation. Says, what happened? So I was traveling from Israel to America. Next to me was a Israeli woman who's a professor in Princeton, eating a ham sandwich on the plane next to me. So she looks at me, you know, I look like a rabbi. She says, you know, if I would have known the rabbi next to me, I would not have ordered a ham sandwich. So he says to her, you know what, doesn't bother me. She said, what? Like, he says, I'm not holding to the level that I really care so much about you, this unknown woman to me, that whether you eat ham sandwiches or not. I'm not holding to that level. Maybe I should be, but I'm not. Honestly, I'm not, you know, I really don't care about you that much that you should eat ham sandwiches. You know? Right? She's like, whoa. You know, it was a, you know. Okay. Then he says to her, but I want to tell you a story. Now, the story wasn't true, but he made up the story. The best stories are not the true stories that you make up. So he said, I want to tell you the story. He says, my brother, you know, bought a lottery ticket and he won the lottery. She says, wow. He says, you know, it was $1 million. She says, wow. He ripped up the ticket. She said, what? He ripped up the ticket. She said, why? He says, were you upset at him? He says, yeah, I was upset at him. Like, you know, like, why did he do that to himself? He says, you know, I'm a little bit upset about somebody who takes 3,000 years of our tradition and rips it up. It's hurting themselves. I feel bad that they're doing that to themselves. And that's how he ended the conversation. Okay, so that's a Rabbi Yonah's point. We care about the person next to us enough that I feel bad that he's hurting himself. I want him to correct himself. How would I want to strengthen him? And how would I not want to say something to him if I could? And I just want to point out that we live in a society which has taken this mitzvah and made it a terrible thing. Tolerance is the watchword of society, and I disagree very strongly with the definition. They've taken the playing field and made it that that's the issue, and it's not the issue. It's not the issue at all. But we believe them. We accept their term, and we feel bad about ourselves the fact that we're intolerant. It's not true. That's not the issue at all. Because nobody's tolerant. Anybody you care about, you're not tolerant about. You're not going to tell about your kids. You're not telling about your spouse. You're not telling about your friends. But the question is, what's the definition of harm is? Once we understand in ourselves the strength of a conviction that that's not the issue, and they're making up a definition which is not fair because it's not true, we're much more comfortable standing in our position where we should be and thinking what we have to do, what we can do. I mean, you know, what are the situations? And I obviously, if you've been thinking about the scenarios play out in the workplace all the time, coworkers are doing many things which halacha would say are improper, the Jewish coworker, non-Jewish coworker in our society, and they're talking about it, and everybody's congratulating them about it, and all the different things, and how do you react? And these are the hard questions that, you know, you're going to ask your local Orthodox rabbi. But I thank you for listening. At this point, Rabbi Lapianti is going to share with us a few thoughts.